Hey, true believers, welcome to another episode of F This Movie. My name is Magic Bromley. I am assembling tonight.
Nice.
With Doug.
I see what you did there.
To talk about The Avengers, this little indie movie that came out this weekend that a few people maybe saw.
I want to thank you for having me, and I'll put this out there right now. I'm thanking you, Mr. Bromley, for having me. Doug, who is not a Marvel comic book guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a fanboy. I'm not a, quote, nerd. I'm a normal person. I like normal things, like butter in my ass and lollipops in my mouth.
usually on a comic book centric movie podcast, we would have a mic, maybe an Adam. But I wanted, you know, the lame man's perspective.
Oh, and so I see. Thank you so much.
I got the lame man, Doug.
Thank you. I think it's more of a matter because you wanted to put this out early and it was a matter of scheduling. And listen, I'm always around. I will always be the Avenger that's like, yeah, sure, Nick Fury. I can totally be there. What time? I have nothing else to do except show up and give my opinions.
If you haven't already heard this little speech that I do at the beginning of every episode, you can find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store or through DVD Verdict at dvdverdictpresents.com. And while you're there, go over to DVD Verdict, read one of the tens of thousands of DVD and Blu-ray reviews, and buy a movie by clicking through the Amazon links and support DVD Verdict. Let's talk about The Avengers, but before we do, let's talk about what we've seen lately.
Well, right, in preparation for this, and I think it'll make everyone happy who is bored by this segment of the show. It's like, what does Doug think about old movies that everyone else has seen? Well, I'll tell you what I've thought. I rewatched Iron Man 2.
Yeah, you did.
And I saw
your 10th favorite movie of 2010?
Yeah, you know, whatever. It's all good. It still holds up except for a key element creation process. And I also saw for the first time I saw Thor.
Yeah, you did.
Kenneth Branagh Thor. He called it a Henry V or Henry VIII or some Shakespearean Henry incarnation superhero movie, which was totally fine. What have you seen lately?
Leading up to the release of The Avengers, AMC theaters, including the AMC theater that I frequent, was doing this Avengers marathon where they showed all five Marvel movies that sort of built up to The Avengers. So you had Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, The First Avenger. And then at midnight, they were showing The Avengers. And I really wanted to go to this thing because the 10-year-old me and the 15-year-old me and the 25-year-old me and probably the 30-year-old me, like if I told any of those people, hey, one day they're going to make a movie out of all these characters and then they're going to make an Avengers movie with everyone and one day they're going to do a marathon of all those movies. You could see them all in a row culminating in the movie of the Avengers, but you're not going to go. those versions of me would punch me in the face. So I really wanted to go, but there were all these things holding me back, like the fact that the last three movies in the marathon were in 3D. I've never seen three 3D movies in a row. I can barely handle one. The Avengers was in 3D. I didn't know if I wanted to see the movie for the first time in 3D. But more than anything, it's the fact that my wife is super pregnant and about to give birth
to her own little Avenger. We'll call him Ant-Man.
It's a girl. We will be naming her Natasha Romanoff.
Wasp.
Look at you. You've been reading up.
Fuck yeah. Because here's the thing. I'm sure people see, it's a Patrick and Doug podcast on a superhero. I want to just say I did do some reading in the last 10 minutes.
But it's a good idea because, you're on hand to say, does this work as a movie or not? Right. Whether or not, you know all this, whether or not you're sort of primed to like this just because you like all these characters. Although I would argue everybody is kind of primed to like this because they've spent 5 years making movies out of all these people. My point is this. Erica is due to give birth any day now. I didn't feel like it was the responsible choice to go to the AMC theater for 12, 15 hours and watch all these superhero movies. So what I did instead As you know this, Douglas, we have built ourselves a little movie theater here in our house. And
very nice. Very impressive.
So I had my own Avengers marathon, and I watched all five movies the day before Avengers came out, and then I went to see Avengers. So I rewatched all of these movies, and it's interesting. I hadn't seen the original Iron Man in a long time. It was in some ways better than I remember. Like, I've always really liked that movie.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
Man, the first two-thirds of that movie are so great and so enjoyable, and Robert Downey Jr. is so much fun, and all of his scenes with Gwyneth Paltrow are so great. And the movie falls apart a little bit at the end when it's just two giant robots fighting.
Which is part of the reason I like Iron Man 2 so much, because the end fighting sequence... And I've been on record, I think, during the 2010 Best of the Year podcast, I talk about how I kind of liked Iron Man 2, much to the chagrin of Patrick and JB, who were like, what? That's a piece of shit. And I'm like, listen.
I never said it was a piece of shit.
When people invent elements, you know, I know that you can roll your eyes. But at the same time, I did like at the end where Iron Man and, I guess, Don Cheadle as, what, War Machine? War Machine fighting the other, automaton robots, whatever. It is over pretty quickly. It's like, yeah, we don't need to see this again. We've already seen this a billion times. So, like, just have a quick little ending, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that, too. So,
watching all the movies back-to-back, it was interesting because I felt like the strengths and weaknesses of all of them really stood out. So, like, there's things in Iron Man 2 that are great, and then but the movie's, like, kind of a mess in a lot of ways. And Incredible Hulk, there's a few things that I really like, and the movie was a little bit worse than I remember.
Okay.
Thor, of all of them, was probably the biggest drag to get through, but only because I had just seen it not that long ago, and it's not the most rewatchable movie in the world. But it was fun. It was fun building up to the Avengers, and that's probably all I'll say, because let's talk about the Avengers.
Well, real quick, if your wife, who is incredibly pregnant, is about to pop,
if
she goes into labor, do you want me to – I'll keep – you want me to keep going? I can't press pause. So I assume when you come back from the hospital after a couple of days,
please keep talking.
Just cut out all the stuff that I'm like. The podcast will be done, but then I'll go about my daily life. So for two more days, you'll just hear what I'm up to. Like,
I don't want to cut any of that out. I want to. That will be the epic keep it all podcast. In. Yeah. For this epic movie. Listen, our plan here is we're going to talk about the Avengers spoiler free for a little while for those of you who haven't seen it. Although, what is your excuse for having not seen it, especially opening weekend?
Well, at the same time, we're posting this earlier than we'd normally post a podcast. So, you know, in that respect, maybe people are waiting till the crowd. I'm typically a person who waits. I don't want to see a theater when there's a person sneezing on my back or a baby breastfeeding on my lap. And I haven't mentioned I have breasts.
So we'll talk spoiler-free for a little while, and then at the end we'll probably talk about some more specific stuff and get a little spoilery, but we will give plenty of notice so you guys
can tune out. A little spoilery was our other podcast.
You can tune out at that point. Douglas.
Yes.
What did you, without giving anything away,
I loved the end when this happened.
What did you think of the Avengers?
Here's what I'll say.
All right.
I think everyone out there should Patrick.
What? No, I'm up.
Oh, I thought he fell asleep. I think everyone out there should absolutely go see it, especially if you've liked only even like I am hot or cold about the previous five movies. I really lean towards like Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, and Captain America are my favorites, and they're my favorite characters in Avengers also. In fact, I think that the movie could just be about those two, and I'll get more into that later during the podcast. But I think everyone out there should absolutely see it, especially because it is this event movie where everyone's been talking about it, or any kind of website or film fandom, whatever. You should absolutely see it. And my opinion should not dissuade you from seeing it. I am not a fanboy. I'm not a comic book nerd. I'm not, and I say nerd endearingly. I'm not trying to disparage or whatever. And I liked the movie a lot. I didn't love it. I didn't think it was even the best comic book movie of the last 10 years. I would think there's two or three others that I really respond to more than this. And I think this movie suffers from, by the way, a little caveat. I'm saying these things, I really liked it. And I don't want to get into that. I don't want to get into negative territory right now, but it's so much easier, I guess, to kind of go that route early on. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is I really enjoyed it. I had a fun time in the theater. My wife, who I saw it with, who I didn't know how she'd react to it, she loved it. She actually hates applauding during the end, at the end of movies, and she clapped before I did. And I was like, oh, you know. And so I really, really enjoyed it. I thought all the casting was excellent as you – I mean, if you – again, it's really hard to kind of analyze it from that perspective too, just because the previous five movies have kind of – aside from Mark Ruffalo's character as the Hulk or Dr. Banner, it's all been established. And I think they did a great job, and I think – I'm just blown away by the fact that in so many ways this could have fallen apart at so many different points. Mm-hmm. And what a gamble. And what, and I'm almost more kind of impressed. The movie's good. The movie is a lot of fun. But I'm, if anything, I'm kind of awed by this notion that all these other parts and components that could, that all have to work, that all right. have to be insanely right. successful. Not right. just that they have to be like, we're going to put out a Captain America movie. If it bombs, who cares? Because we're still going to make the Avengers movie. But it really kind of had to work, and it really kind of right. had to make money. And I'm sure there was contingencies in place that if it wasn't as successful as they had thought, they would still would have gone forward with the version or whatever. But the fact that all the previous movies were box office successes, I mean, you probably can speak more to that. I actually don't know if they all were huge. Was like Thor a huge summer blockbuster?
It made a bunch of money. I think the, out of all of them, I think The Incredible Hulk is the one that underperformed a little bit, but it came out the same summer, I think, as Iron Man and The Dark Knight. So that's probably why.
Okay. No, it was 2008. That was an Iron Man, was it?
I thought it was 2007, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe it was 2000. I know nothing. I literally know nothing. Here's the thing. Yeah. I don't want to get like too caught up in a discussion of like a response to the response to the Avengers, but I was kind of thinking the same thing. It's like, you already can't talk about the movie without like qualifying it in this weird way, because it's either people are going nuts for it and it's like, this is the best superhero movie ever made. It's awesome. It's great. Or you come off as like the negative sort of quibbly kind of like, I'm complaining, or you're the guy who's like, ah, fuck the Avengers, Dark Knight, you know, like,
Right. I was actually blown away on Facebook, especially. There's a couple, I mean, I guess they're my friends, in quotes, who I'm friends with on Facebook, but people I don't really know that well, but definitely have opinions on stuff like this, that it's weirdly, I mean, I'm very much in favor. I know I might sound cynical sometimes or sound sarcastic, but I'm very much in favor of like, yeah, there's room for everything. There's room for all this stuff. I want to see a Dark Knight Rises. I want to see Avengers. I want to see The Amazing Spider-Man, even though I still scratch my head as to why they would make this movie so soon after, you know, all the other stuff. But it's like, why do we have to say like, no, F Dark Knight, right. only the Avengers, or F the right. Avengers. And it's like, no, you're both kind of crazy, because they both exist in totally separate universes and they can coexist.
And they could not be more different. And that's one of the things I really liked about the Avengers. So here's the deal. Without being, you know, completely hyperbolic or completely like nitpicky, I really liked the Avengers. I really liked it. There are things about it that I liked less about some other things, you know, and I guess we'll get more specific about that. But if we're just trying to lead up front with like, what's your thought on the movie?
Yeah.
And should people see it? Absolutely. It's
right.
super entertaining. It's super fun. And like you said, it's a miracle that it even exists, because growing up as a kid reading explicitly Marvel comic books,
So you read all of the
exclusively, I think it's the word I was looking for.
Well, you not read the R-rated version.
I read the explicit Marvel comic because I drew penises on them.
Right on their cheeks and
their faces. Exclusively Marvel comics. I never would have dreamt of the idea that like they were going to make this huge Hollywood movie of the Avengers. I mean, I was super excited watching a TV movie in which like the Incredible Hulk met up with Thor, like, and it was awful. And like the guy playing Thor, everything about it was terrible, but I didn't care, 'cause it was like, look, there's more than one superhero in a movie.
Right.
So I never could have dreamt of it. And when I saw Iron Man back in, I think 2007 or 2008, I don't remember. You know, I didn't know anything about an Avengers movie. Nobody knew that they were even thinking about doing an Avengers movie at that point, because Marvel Studios had just become its own thing. Up until then, you know, the movies were all released through different, you know, Sony right. had Spider-Man and Fox had X-Men. Well, and
I think that they actually had talked about as early as 2005 doing a movie, but that, who knows if that's just lip service, like doing an right. Avengers movie specifically. Who knows if that's just some studio executive saying like, yeah, we're Marvel Studios now. We're partnering with Paramount to do our distribution and releasing. now we're going to do an Avengers movie, and it could just be just like total bloviating, right, kind of puffing up your chest and seeing like we're legit. But again, then it gets down to brass tacks in terms of like, okay, you need to have all these, again, components in place that have to be incredibly charismatic and successful, and people have to really feel something for these characters, because you can't just launch into an Avengers movie. And I know they've tried. And likewise, though, it's a thing like with Fantastic Four. It's like no one cares about these characters, so why should I care about this movie? And well, so I'm saying, if you went to Avengers without having to establish all the groundwork that they established, I think that it definitely worked in that respect.
Yeah, well, right. If they hadn't already done all these movies, the Avengers movie we would have had would have been very, very different.
Right.
So I'm sitting in Iron Man, and there's that little post-credits scene where Nick Fury shows up, which is already exciting.
Sure.
And he says, I want to talk to you about the Avengers initiative. And it's like, oh my goodness, they just hinted at the idea that like there's going to be an Avengers movie. And then later that summer, I go see The Incredible Hulk, and Tony Stark shows up in The Incredible Hulk. And now characters are starting to cross over, and you're like, wait, this could become a reality. Right. And shortly after that is when they sort of say like, yeah, this is basically, that's the end game. We're building to this. So we're going to do a Thor movie. We're going to do a Captain America, and it's going to culminate in an Avengers movie. And it's like, oh my gosh. And
even specifically with Thor and Captain America, I felt like, unlike with Iron Man, because even the Iron Man thing, when Nick Fury shows up at the end, if the Avengers never happened, it's kind of like a fun,
exactly,
forgettable, not forgettable, right, but just like, oh, right, that was so cool. And how they did that and just hinted at something that didn't eventually, right, come to fruition.
Right.
But man, Thor and Captain America, the first Avenger, I mean, obviously even in the title of Captain, right, America, it's like, it's so shoehorned into this.
Well, I would argue by Iron Man 2. I mean, that's part of what hurts Iron Man 2 is that they have to lay so much groundwork for the Avengers, like jamming in Nick Fury, like jamming in Black Widow.
Right.
There's so much in Iron Man 2 that gets hurt by trying to set up the Avengers. But now here we have, so here's the thing. So you have all these movies, they all have to work. The casting has to be right on all of them. They all have to succeed at the box office so that America like has goodwill towards these characters.
Right.
So really, I mean, the Avengers could have in so many ways been kind of phoned in, because the groundwork, it could have been a little bit lazy, honestly, because the groundwork, sure, has already been laid. We already like all these people. We're all going to go see it, A, because it's the first big summer movie, B, because it's a big comic book movie, and C, obviously most of all, because it has all of these characters that we really like. So the movie really could have just been about them showing up and talking and fighting. And I think, you know, I don't know if people would have been thrilled with that, but I think people would have said like, that it's fine because it had what I wanted. Sure. It had all these, right, characters on the screen at the same time. So the fact that it exists is a miracle. I think the fact that it is really good, and I would argue in spots pretty great, is, I don't want to say icing on the cake, because that's an expression I don't like to use.
I bet you dollars to donuts that you'll use icing on the cake. Another expression I don't like to use.
It's a movie that we're kind of like lucky to have. Again, it didn't have to be as good as it is. So we're fortunate that it is, that some care went into it. Not just in laying the groundwork, but Joss Whedon, you know, appears to have sort of put some effort into making this a movie that really delivers, that's about a little bit more than just putting these characters all on screen at the same time.
Sure. All of this sounds like qualification, though.
It's really not. I'm just saying that even if I do have some issues with the movie, and I do, but like, I've thought about it a ton since I saw it. I really, sure, want to go see it again because it's really fun and entertaining. And if nothing else, it has moments in it that I'm already chasing again, that I want to see again.
You're chasing the dragon.
I am. So yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was super entertaining. And, you know, again, people are already saying like, that's how you do a comic book movie and every blockbuster should be at least that good. And it's like, okay,
well, man, no.
It's right. All these crazy hyperbolic statements. You know, you can't say like, that's how good every comic book movie should be. Because again, this is an anomaly. We're never going to have something like this again, that they've spent 5 years,
right,
and five different movies building towards. You know, even if they do an Avengers 2, which I'm sure they will, since this appears to be on track to be the biggest opening of all time. So it's going to be huge. And so, yeah, the Avengers 2, because they already have all these actors locked into multi-picture deals,
right,
is pretty much probably a done deal. But even if they do an Avengers 2, it's never going to be like this again. Like, this can never happen again. This is an amazing right. thing that has happened.
And I think actually the Avengers 2, I don't think that's the next, from what I've seen or read or picked
it's
up.
It's not.
That's, yeah, Iron Man 3 is supposed to come out. And actually I read something that said Robert Downey Jr. signed a 4-picture deal with Marvel, which would make Iron Man 3 his last, you know, officially yeah. contracted yeah. movie, which I hope obviously he would agree to re-sign to do a fifth, if they in fact yeah. do an Avengers 2, even though, like you said, it won't ever compare to this culmination of everything, this, you know, awesomeness.
At the same time, in some ways, I think an Avengers 2 could be superior to the Avengers in the same way that so many comic book movie sequels are, because while this is not an origin story, because all the characters have already had their own origins, right. in some ways it is an origin story because it's about the formation of this group, and it's not really until the last act of the movie that we have them totally working as a group. And so going into an Avengers 2, you're starting from that place.
You know what? I hadn't thought about that before, but I completely agree, because I think I said earlier in the podcast, and again, this is without qualifying, like, the movie is great, you should go see it. but I'm responding again to people that say it's the best superhero movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best that Marvel's ever done, which is also debatable. I said there's two, possibly three movies that I like more than this that were in the last decade that were superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my favorite is Spider-Man 2. And of mm-hmm. course, that benefits because in Spider-Man 1, is a fine movie. It's good. I like it. But there's a lot of the origin story stuff that just kind of like, I don't know, when I'm in a theater, oftentimes, and I think a lot of people out there can probably respond or empathize, or not, that's not the right word, but just to understand what I'm
explicit.
Saying.
Explicit. The word is explicit.
Explicit. That sometimes when you know what's going to happen as an audience member, like, mm-hmm. I know that this person's going to end up with this character. I'm not talking romantic comedy. I'm talking about in a kind of functional action movie specifically, that you know that they're going to do this or get to this point, but you know that we have to go through, okay, 45 minutes of setup and kind of back and forth where the person has to leave and then come back and they have to realize they have to be down before they can get back up, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And oftentimes I find that stuff really – I'm just bored with it, and maybe it's yeah. because I've seen so many movies, especially lately, for the purposes of this podcast, where I'm just kind of like, okay, I just want to get to – I want to discover something or get to the point in a movie where I'm surprised and where I'm like – I'm already like on the same page as the character. I'm already with you. You don't have to bother justifying these things. Just go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Spider-Man 2 does a great job of that. Dark Knight does a great job of that too
yeah.
where – Batman Begins is also a fine movie, and I like it a lot. But Dark Knight, I mean, I know there's a lot of haters out there for Dark Knight, which boggles the mind. But it's also one of those things where it's like, yes, now we can have fun with this franchise.
Right,
and I think
right.
the Avengers 2 might be a similar thing. Because, again, some of my issues – and, again, they're quibbles. They're minor. It might have to do with like, okay, I'm going to have to introduce Thor, Captain America.
And right, and everybody has to meet. Everybody has to come around and agree to be part of this
right.
group. And there's some of that – groundwork that has to be laid, even in this movie, which is, you know, essentially the payoff of all this other groundwork.
Right, right, right.
Real quick, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, I advise you to go out and see it as soon as possible, only because you had said something about surprises. And the Avengers doesn't necessarily have a ton of, like, surprises in terms of, it's not a movie about twists, it's not, you know, big reveals or anything like that. But there are a lot of moments, my favorite moments in the movie, I think, are going to be spoiled fairly quickly by people talking about them. Like,
oh, sure.
This was my favorite part when this character did this or said this. And, like, it's
when
not...
When Superman shows up? That
it's
was
not
awesome.
Necessarily a huge spoiler, but, like, what makes it so enjoyable is that element of surprise.
Right.
Of not
right, right.
knowing that, like, oh, the Hulk was going to do this at this moment, you know?
Yeah, right.
And if you hear people talk about it before you see it, it will, I think, suck the air out of it a little bit. So
oh, absolutely.
Try
I think
and
that
see it as soon as possible.
With so much, even for me, I saw it Saturday and you mm-hmm. saw it Friday. I mean, people internationally, we have one of our fans and Twitter followers and Facebook friends, Carl, right? Carl. I don't know if he's in Australia or the UK, but he had seen it like a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
So basically, like, just watching people on Twitter and Facebook kind of respond, and this is I thought it was pretty interesting. You probably could speak more to this in terms of release dates, that for whatever reason, foreign markets got this movie before the U.S. did.
Yeah.
So people in Australia and the U.K. were able to see it last weekend, and people were posting even on our feed, direct messaging us and stuff, saying like, hey, you got to do a podcast, and or like, I love this. And I'm like, oh, slow down, because I don't want to know. And again, like I said, I saw it Saturday, you saw it Friday. Even that extra night where I've picked up my phone and saw the Twitter feed or whatever, and someone said something about it, I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't, you know. Even I hate to be so base, but even like the idea that I'm just missing that many hours of part of the conversation.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
And I think that's especially for stuff like this. Of course, there's so many examples of movies where you don't need to see it right away. You can wait to see romantic comedies. You can wait to see dramas. But this is such a finger on the pulse moment of this country and the world, actually, where, yes, we've been waiting for this, you know, anticipating this for such a long time, that how can you not want to see it right away? So, absolutely. Go see it.
You had brought up people saying, you know, this is the best comic book movie ever made or the best superhero movie ever made. And I kind of side with you in that, you know, maybe I like Spider-Man 2 better, or I don't know, because I feel like I need to see this movie.
Yeah,
again.
I mean, it's to even compare those two, it's so silly and so kind of
superficial. And it's not like, and it's not like we have to come up with a definitive answer. But I do understand, you know, I think why some people are saying that, because if you are a comic book fan, obviously this rewards you in so many ways.
It gives you so much of what you want. I've been begging for.
And it's so comic booky, and you know, and that's the thing about
comic book carrion.
When people are, you know, Dark Knight versus Avengers or whatever, again, they're totally different, because the Dark Knight, with the exception of the costumes, you know, might as well be a Michael Mann movie. Like, that's part of what's neat about those movies, is that Christopher Nolan grounds it so much in realism. They're like these big crime epics in which, you know, characters just happen to have this tech and wear a bat costume. Whereas the Avengers, I mean, you have gods and you have aliens and you have crazy ships and mystical weapons and a guy that turns into a monster. I mean, it's like, it's so out there, and that's so much of, you know, if you've been a comic book reader your whole life, those are the things that you've always loved in your comic books. And so to have all of that in one movie is so rewarding.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because that's honestly, and I've said it now four times on this podcast alone, that I'm not a comic book reader. I read a couple when I was a kid. I just never got into it. And I'm not a fanboy. I don't read all the backstories of comic book stuff and whatever else. But there is something to even Spider-Man 2, which is of the Marvel Universe and has a mythical element to it in terms of a radioactive spider, whatever, it still is kind of grounded in something real. And I think that is what I respond to. I respond to Iron Man, who is tech. It's all tech suits.
Right.
I respond to Dark Knight. It's a crime movie. I respond to Spider-Man 2. I even respond to Captain America, probably more for like the World War II aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Than I would to Thor, which is completely just fantasy.
Right.
It's fantastical and kind of out there, and even, I don't know.
But what Marvel, I think, has done so well, both in their comic books, and again, I was always a Marvel reader more than DC, and that's not bashing DC, it's just the Marvel characters were the ones that hooked me. What they always did in their comic books was exactly what you're talking about, was that they kind of grind. Things were always kind of grounded in reality. So you had Spider-Man, who had these, you know, special superpowers, but he was also like worried about paying his rent. Like that was what Marvel,
or the girl, like he's worried
added
about the girl,
to the conversation. Right. And what the movies have always done so well. And I think what serves the Avengers so well, again, because it could have been a movie about guys in suits beating each other up, but all of the movies have paid such close attention to developing the characters and the personalities of these individuals, even though they have superpowers, that they have sort of real world personalities. And each of the movies, I think, has done a good job of establishing that, if nothing else. I mean, Thor has a lot of problems, but what it did a really good job of was establish the character of Thor.
And that's even the casting of Chris Hemsworth.
Absolutely.
Is so incredibly charismatic and literally cut from marble. I want to touch him.
And so coming into the Avengers, it's great that like attention has been paid to these characters, and they're still allowed to be characters. They don't lose those personalities under the sheer sort of bigness and weight and scope of this movie, where
right.
it's not about these guys being swallowed up into this story about a team of superheroes. In fact, it's their personalities and the way that they sort of bounce off each other and interact that drives a great deal of the action. Yeah. And I think that's really, really smart. And, again, a lot of that credit belongs to Marvel Studios, but also I think to Joss Whedon for sort of emphasizing that. Because
okay.
Well, because I think, he has sole screenplay credit. And I know there was a screenplay, I think, that Zach Penn wrote and Joss Whedon was hired and kind of rewrote the thing from the ground up. And I understand why. I mean, if you have Joss Whedon working on your movie, you probably want him, to write your script.
Well, who wants a fucking Zach Penn script? The guy wrote, PCU and The Last Action Hero.
He wrote a couple of comic book movies, though, too.
He wrote The Incredible Hulk, but, yeah. It's obviously this guy is more of a hack
than
Joss
Whedon. Listen, he doesn't even have the C in his name. He's just Z-A-K.
And two N's in the pen. But it's a thing where Joss Whedon has such a voice. I think that's what's interesting, too, more so than, just a script. Here is a script about superheroes. It's like, no, I have a personality and a perspective, which actually – and the reason I kind of made that face when you were talking about how the credit goes to Joss Whedon is because I think credit goes to all the previous – all the previous directors for kind of making their movies – the previous directors of the five previous films of making their movies and, Joe Johnston for Captain America for, kind of imbuing that sort of aesthetic and kind of the character driven, whatever.
No, I completely.
Jon Favreau for Iron Man. Like all that stuff is kind of taken. Joss Whedon, all he has to do is pick up those pieces and put them together, I think.
But there's a version of this movie where the filmmaker does not do that. There's a version of this movie that says, okay, the groundwork has been laid by all these other guys. All I have to do is get these guys on screen and have them get swallowed up by special effects and fights. And Joss Whedon does seem more interested in the character dynamics than he does in the action, which isn't to say that the action is disappointing. I like a lot of the action.
And that's even maybe where I disagree just a little bit, because I feel like it's really they're two halves. And I think the character part is the stuff I respond to.
Yeah, me too.
And obviously, but it's like some of the action stuff too, like you're saying, like the character drives the action. Is that one of your points?
Yeah.
I think some of that action, though, is completely, completely absurd. I think some of the stuff is so – the scope is so big and the scope is so kind of like fantastical. And I think that part of it, too, is – and this isn't a spoiler necessarily, but the villain being Loki from an Asgardian because he is a god just like Thor is, that the villain being that – so the threat, the enemy is kind of this – also this fantastical thing, I think, kind of creates a situation in which the action sequences are elevated to that fantastical level. And I think that that's in a way – I mean, think about the first Iron Man. It's and I know you don't like the last third between the two – the fight between the two metal men.
Yeah.
But it's basically very much a struggle for Tony Stark's character, and he kind of, fights some of the terrorists and has to fight the government and fights himself and fights Pepper Potts and blah, blah, blah. And the end, he ends up fighting, I forgot his name, Jebediah, I believe something. It's Jeff Bridges.
Obadiah Stade, I think is, yeah.
Jeff Bridges' character. And it's still like, it's still grounded. And again, quick side note or caveat, again, this appeals to my sensibilities as not a, out there, outlandish person. I like things that are grounded. I like technology over fantasy. That's what I respond to. So I like the fact that if there's a villain, it's going to be a villain that I can, pardon the pun, but sink my teeth into in terms of like whatever. But with Loki, there's a lot of like, well, you can't. No, you're fucked unless you have something. Like even at one point. Well, I won't go there until we get to the spoilers part. Okay. So, sorry.
Well, and that's one of the issues with the movie, I think, is that. I understand the need for the threat to be huge because they need a threat to justify.
Large enough, right.
Exactly. Unless, the entire planet is at stake. It doesn't make sense. There's, so they have to go with something really big. Although I would argue I have some problems with sort of the villain. I think he does a great job. Tom Hiddleston is really good as Loki and he's interesting, but there's some weird things.
You're not afraid of the man who has a million nuclear bombs. You're afraid of the man who has one nuclear bomb. Peacemaker. There you go. The first Peacemaker reference.
I believe it is in over 100 episodes. I agree that all the stuff with the characters, that's when the movie is at its best. But I do think that even when you get into the last act of the movie, which, again, I don't think is a spoiler to say, is this massive battle sequence that takes place in New York City. I think even at that point, the movie is emphasizing the character motivations. It's not just about, like, let's have Captain America fight a bunch of these guys and Iron Man fights these guys. Like, they are still acting within the characters that they've established, and I think that's really great. Because, honestly, I do think on a story level, the movie isn't all that great. No. I mean, because, again, it's sort of very simplistic. It's like, there's a threat, we got to get this group of people together, they have to get along, they have to come together to defeat the threat. Like, yes, that's the basic level, but there are other things about it that I think are problematic.
Well, yes and no. Like I said, yeah, the basic story is there's a threat, we people together. In that respect, it's incredibly basic. But in other respect, I read a plot summary, I forgot where. It wasn't IMDb or it wasn't Wikipedia, but it was just like this thing where I just like, oh yeah, this was the movie I just saw. But man, it is like, so at this point, he's in this cell and he has to break out and he does this wand with this sphere on it and touches the guy's heart and this takes this away. Just like, what is going – like, I can't believe I just saw that. But it, I guess to Joss Whedon's credit, it does all make sense. It just is kind of like, oh, I wish it didn't have to be so just like weirdly tangential, you know, and going down these weird – roads and just would stick to something that I can and that's not even to say the movie is confusing. It's not at all. The movie is not confusing whatsoever. It's really, you can follow every beat, every plot point, and know exactly what's going on.
And I appreciate the fact that even within this movie, about, you know, and all of these guys were big enough to sustain their very own multi-million-dollar grossing franchise, you know what I mean? And so now they're all in one movie. And again, it would have just been very easy to do a lazy version of this movie. Yeah. Even if it was very expensive and very busy and had cool action or whatever, like, I still feel like it could have been pretty lazy. And I appreciate the fact that Joss Whedon gave almost all of the characters arcs within this movie. You know, like Captain America gets, you know, one fifth of the screen time that he had in his own movie, or one, you know, he gets one fifth of the screen time compared to Thor and Iron Man, but he still has his own arc. Same for Iron Man, same for Bruce Banner. I think the only one who gets a little shortchanged in terms of that is Thor, and the character works because it's Chris Hemsworth and he's really charismatic and he's established Thor as being a pretty awesome character in the movie Thor, but, you know, in the Avengers, he's basically just Thor. Like, he doesn't change.
He can get away with it, or the character of Thor can get away with it a little more, where we don't necessarily need to have the arc, because of all the five movies leading to this movie, this movie's villain is Thor's brother. Right. So his arc is almost built into
He has a motivation, but he doesn't really have an arc. You know what I mean? Like, and the fact that he's like just Thor, and I didn't read a ton of Thor comic books growing up, so I didn't know that much about him. But my concern when they were making Thor was like, he's kind of a one-note character, right? He's just Thor. And so I was impressed that the movie version of Thor actually did give him an arc and give him a place to go. I think I said on that podcast, like, that Thor in some ways is the reversal of every other superhero movie, which is always about a man learning to become a hero. And Thor is kind of about a guy who's born a hero and has to learn
to become a man. Just kidding. I think that's actually really insightful and great. I just wanted
Thanks for sleeping through it, ass
no
face.
Problem. ass face?
So,
is it because my face looks like an ass?
He had this arc in Thor, and he doesn't really in the Avengers. He ends up kind of one note. Yeah. Whereas I think everybody else kind of has a place to go, you know?
And he gets away with it too, just because, again, Chris Hemsworth is incredibly just like smooth and like charismatic and, and great, you know?
Right. And like you said, I mean, he factors into the plot because it is his brother. And so he has a motivation. He has a reason for being there. He has something that he wants. It's not just, he's not like a completely static character, but at the same time,
Natalie Portman to be in a safe place.
He wants to look at her face on the computer.
Why isn't she in this movie? Oh, she's safe. Don't worry about her. Focus on the Tesseract.
Yeah, and no mention of poor Cap's girl, you know, like...
Of who?
Captain America's girl.
Oh, Peggy. Well, she's dead.
We assume so, but it's like, why they have to pay lip service to Natalie Portman, but
wasn't
no
she,
mention
she's
of...
She's a star, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah,
what,
I guess.
What about Kat Denning? Where's her? What happened to her?
Darcy. Where's Darcy? Okay.
So you said before that you are an explicit reader of Marvel comics.
Rich.
I know it's never going to die.
Nope.
But no, as an exclusive reader,
luckily I will.
Of oh, Jesus.
Soon?
As an exclusive reader of Marvel Comics, how close was the movie to the mythology of the comic book?
There's absolutely no way to answer that.
I even said that to my wife at one point too, just because she was like, "Well, what happened? Is this close?"
And
I
said, "There is no single mythology. Even right. I mean, even the characters are different. You know what I mean? Like the original Avengers was not this group."
But even I told my wife, it's not like a book with a beginning, middle, and end. It's an ongoing thing.
Exactly.
It's always evolving. It pillages from itself. It, you know, it's always kind of changing to suit the needs of whatever their readers. But I just wondered, like, I know I read something, because I don't even know, like, that when the Avengers comic first came out, it wasn't the thought of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Nick Fury. In fact, Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. are a relatively new invention in the comic book universe. I want to say as recent as 2000. That was what I read. Maybe. No?
No,
that's
been,
not right.
He's been around a lot longer.
Okay. But still, that the Avengers...
The Sam Jackson iteration of Nick Fury is newer.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, too. But still, regardless, the Avengers did not assemble initially at the behest of S.H.I.E.L.D., that they assembled for a different reason.
Sure.
But aside from that, what I mean, how else... is it like... Are all these characters... Like, is Black Widow and Hawkeye, are they really as important as... Or not... That's a loaded question. Because they're not at all. But are they really like founding members of the Avengers?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
I know Hawkeye was at one point in the West Coast Avengers. I don't remember him being in the regular Avengers.
And that's what comic books lose me.
And that's the thing. It's like even within the Marvel Universe, you can have 50 different answers to almost any question you ask. So there's no true like... With a few exceptions, like what is this character's origin? But even that gets sort of retconned all the time and like changed. And
I beg your pardon, what was that expression you just used?
Retconned. I'm sorry, retroactive continuity.
My God, you're a nerd.
Avengers.
I totally get to retcon.
I don't want the oils to get on the pages.
I use tweezers with the movie. What?
I tweezed the Avengers. So what I appreciate about the movie is that what is true to the comic books is the spirit of every one of these characters. And that has not always been the case in every comic book movie. Even some of the Marvel movies, that has not always been the case. And that goes back to what you were saying, that like most of that credit goes to the original movies that came out, Favreau's Iron Man or Joe Johnston's Captain America, that the characters were established in those movies.
And even the casting agents, whoever picked these stars to be, I mean, I couldn't imagine Iron Man as anyone else.
Right?
You know?
I mean,
I can't even imagine Captain America at this point as anyone else.
And that's the thing. And Chris Evans, you know, he was in the Fantastic Four. Like, he had already had his at-bat in a comic book movie. And Fantastic Four and its sequel are two of the worst comic book movies ever made. He's about the only thing that's okay in them, but like,
it's because he is awesome. And okay.
He is, but this is such a departure for him because in those movies, he's just Mr. like smartass. Oh. He's every character that Chris Evans played until Captain America. It's just Mr. like cocky smartass. And he's so good in Captain America and in the Avengers. And he might be it's hard for me to pick a favorite part, like a favorite character in the Avengers, because a case could be made for Iron Man because he's just super entertaining and gets all the good jokes. A case could be made for the Hulk even, and we'll get into that more in spoilers because it was so great to see. And this is one of the things that people have been saying. You know, so much of what we're saying is probably not original because people have been talking about this movie so much. And one of the things that's repeated ad nauseum is the Hulk steals the movie. And this is like the first time they've really gotten the Hulk right in a movie. And he has some of my favorite moments in the movie. But Captain America, and I don't even want to spoil any of his lines, but he has some great dialogue and he's sort of the beating heart at the center of the movie. And Chris Evans is so great.
For sure. The last thing I'll say about, and I want to get back to my concern, and I realize again, this is not an issue that's debatable. It's not an issue that you can persuade me to change my opinion, because I think there are people out there that are either kind of like really accept and like fantasy and really don't. And I just happen to be a person who doesn't accept and like fantasy. I know we've been friends for a long time. We've talked about this a lot in terms of like, if I am in a fantasy scenario, this hypothetical fantasy, if I have a sword and I'm attacking a wizard can just make an anti-sword spell. And it's like, oh, that's perfect. And what I like, and I was actually talking to my wife after this movie, and I said, what I like about Star Wars so much is that it's so grounded, and the gravity of everything, meaning like you've got the mechanical machines that do all these things, and you've got the it's like guns and knives and things like that. And there it toys a little bit with fantasy in terms of like there's the Jedi, obviously, in the dark and the good sides. But even that, if you walk up behind a Jedi and he's not prepared for you, he can move things and push things and has a lightsaber. But if you stab him, he's going to die.
Right.
And I think that that's something that's like, wow, that's credit to Star Wars. And again, we're not talking about fucking Star Wars, but I have this issue. And again, when I think about like Iron Man, it's like everything about what he's doing, aside from inventing an element, is somehow based in this world that I'm like, yes, even though it's totally an exaggeration of that world, it's like, yes, he's flying because he's got propulsion on his feet and hands.
Right.
And I think that that's so much of what, and I guess if you want to move on to spoilers right now, we can talk a little bit about like the,
well, you know,
end and whatever.
That's, I think, one of the reasons why Avengers is so satisfying for comic book readers. And I'm sure there are comic book readers who don't like the movie, and there's non-comic. I mean, I think the movie works for people who don't care about comics, because I think it's very, very entertaining.
Oh, absolutely.
But for comic book readers, it's super satisfying because that, you know, that's the way that sort of the Marvel universe, which again is really the only one I can speak to, works in that, like, yeah, you can read Iron Man comic books and it's just the Iron Man universe, and it's sort of grounded. You know, he can invent anything, so that's already, like, a stretch, you know, because he's such a brilliant scientist that he can solve any problem, including invent an element. But, like, you can read just Iron Man, and it's grounded. The same way you can go back and watch Iron Man and Iron Man 2 and presumably Iron Man 3, and it takes place within that universe that you're talking about that's a little bit more inside your comfort zone. But Iron Man is also a part of the Avengers, which is crazy, and they go to outer space. And
well, even I read something that John Favreau, Kevin Favreau, I believe, is John Favreau had said about how he was nervous about the Avengers. He's an executive producer on the Avengers, but he obviously is not directing it. And obviously, as a director of two of the five, I think had the most at stake, or the most kind of invested, not at stake, but more most invested. And he had concerns. I read an interview where he said, I was nervous that you take something grounded like the tech superhero of Iron Man and put him next to a god like Thor. And even though and actually I give credit to Thor, the movie Thor, for going out of its way a little bit to explain like we're not gods. We just have skill sets that are different than the humans, and we're human. But even when Thor was stripped, spoilers for Thor, when he was stripped by his dad, Odin, and sent to Earth, like he is human. He's just a big, strong human, but still doesn't have, cannot summon thunder, can't lift the hammer out of the rock, you know, things like that. And so John Favreau talking about this had said, like, I'm really nervous about it. And that's why I think he actually was even more involved as an executive producer to kind of balance all those things. And in that respect, I do like it because it does kind of satisfy my most base level of like, well, I need to have some grounding for all this, you know.
And that's part of what it works about the movie for me, too, is that it does sort of acknowledge and even celebrate the varying skill levels and abilities, especially in that final battle where you have it. It's taking place like in all these different levels throughout the city based on like what each character is capable of doing. So Captain America, who's super strong and super agile and like is a super soldier, but not necessarily super powered, is sort of doing this ground battle while Thor is up in the sky, fucking calling down the lightning and stuff. Like,
that was pretty cool. Yeah.
And so you have people of varying powers and abilities, fighting side by side and
doing
that's really cool.
Too.
Yeah.
They all have a part to play and they're doing it.
And again, even 10 years
ago, Hawkeye is shooting arrows. I mean, that's his thing, right?
But like a lot of arrows.
I mean, they're kind of special arrows too.
Again, even 10 years ago, part of why this movie is exciting for me, again, even though it's so stupid because I feel like we're so, like, we're qualifying everything. It's not the best thing ever made, but we still really like it. And it's, like, it's so obnoxious that you have to worry about, like, where your praise fits in amidst this giant conversation.
It's built into this movie, though, just because you can't have a movie like this that is so – it's resting on the shoulders of five other movies and everyone's going to be talking about it and analyzing it, and that's how you almost have to approach it in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm approaching it in one way, the base way, is saying like it's really a lot of fun. Some parts did not work for me at all.
Okay.
But by the end of the movie, I was clapping and enjoying it an awful lot. But the first and I guess this is the first thing I'll say. I mean, it's not really spoilers.
Well, there's one thing I want to say before we get to that.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
No. Just that even 10 years ago when the X-Men came out, and X-Men was sort of the movie that started all of this. It was the movie that made movie studios realize, like, oh, there's potential gold here in comic books, and people want to see superhero movies. And so X-Men begat Spider-Man, begat Fantastic Four, begat Iron Man, you know, whatever.
Almost went off the rails a couple times.
Oh, for sure. And there's some really awful comic book movies. But, like, even X-Men, you get the feeling that, like, back in 2000, studio executives were hedging their bets a little bit. So you had these superpowered people, but it's still really grounded in reality, and they have to be wearing just like black leather suits, because if they were wearing their crazy X-Men costumes, people would think that was silly. And so they try and ground it as much in reality as they can. And here it is 10 years later.
Except for Wolverine's hair. Like, what is up with that? That always kind of bugged me too. Yeah. Like, it just, what? It's, I don't know.
But here it is 12 years ching, later ching. And however many superhero movies later. And like, there are no limits. You know what I mean? Like, this movie is willing to go to all of the places that comic books are capable of going, that superhero books are capable of going, you know? And again, as a fan of those kinds of stories and characters, there's something that's really rewarding about that. You know, we talk all the time about, well, then the geeks have inherited the earth. And so now you can make a movie like The Avengers that goes to crazy places and people are going to go see it. And that's exciting.
I have an issue with one man in particular. I think I'm going to go out on a limb and kind of pin any problem I have with this movie on one specific person.
Okay. Is it me?
It's not. No. You're not totally innocent. Let's be honest. No. And this is totally.
Are we moving into spoilers now?
Maybe not. I mean, let's just say spoilers. And from this point on.
Okay. Everyone go see Avengers if you haven't already. All right. And now spoilers for The Avengers coming up. So if you've seen the movie, please listen for the rest of the show while we get super nitpicky.
Okay. So I don't really know if this is entirely the case, but the few examples I've seen where I'm like, oh man, I wish it was done differently. Or, oh man, this is an interesting choice that they've made. I think might be the responsibility of the producer, Kevin Feige.
Feige? Yeah.
Who I read one quote, and this might be all you need, where he said he's comparing the Avengers to Transformers Dark of the Moon.
What?
Where he wanted to have that ZOMG moment of scope and size. Like, oh my God, but I don't know. It's like what kids write in their text messaging machines. ZOMG.
To the front.
Like Zoinks, I assume, or ZGADS. I have no idea. But this guy who's in charge of Marvel Studios, and actually, I want to say the CEO of Disney resigned like in April.
So yeah, because of John Carter, basically.
Right. So Disney is without a CEO, and this guy is actually rumored to take over for Disney. Mm. And so this guy who's the Marvel guy, due credit, he's been responsible for Iron Man, which I love, and Captain America, which is awesome, and this. But then he says a quote like that where it's like he compares it to Dark of the Moon, and he wants like the size and the scope to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm just like, I take issue with that right there. Yeah. And going back, and I guess this is a tangential to what I said about like tech versus fantasy, whatever. I always have an issue with – I love Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. I think that's a great movie, and a lot of the reasons why I think it's a great movie are the characters, are the performances, are the casting, are the play back and forth between everyone. This is going to sound really nitpicky and really stupid, but I have a big issue with the ship, the mining ship that the Romulan whatever Eric Bana's character has that comes out of the wormhole. Spoilers for Star Trek. And it is like it makes the USS Kelvin and the USS Enterprise later look like dots, looks like mosquitoes to this giant thing. I'm like, I don't see how physically – I mean, I imagine they build these things in space, but I don't see how physically this thing could even move or run or operate. Just the magnitude of it is – unbelievable to me, and a little bit. I'm not going to knock Star Trek because I really liked it, but for a little tiny second, I'm taken out of the movie just because the scope is so outrageous. And I think that with some of this too, at the end, one of the battle sequences. I love the final battle sequence. I love what the Hulk does. I love what all the characters do. But so much of it is just like, well, I guess you just have to make it bigger and throw more at the screen. And there's more Chitauri and more these silverfish that are flying through the air. And it's like, what does it mean? It means nothing. It means that we have a really talented graphics designer, like 5 or 6 or 7 different firms that have provided graphic design visual effects to our movie. Yeah. And it to me, it's like, I'd rather have a really great fight sequence one-on-one than just like, oh, all these like nameless, faceless creatures that are on chariots that are going through space or whatever. I just think that this guy, this producer that says these things, it's like, well, that's probably the problem, because you see the movie is maybe more black and white in terms of like, I liked in Transformers how they have more robots in disguise. And so I need, in this movie, I need to have more bad stuff happen. And again, the caveat being that, yeah, to justify the involvement of all these superheroes, that you need to have, you know, something that's
a big threat. Yeah.
But it's so like at a certain point, it's like, okay, I'm kind of getting sick of watching Hawkeye shoot arrows and blow up and Iron Man fly around a little bit.
Okay. For me, that sequence still worked.
It still works. I agree.
Because I felt like, even despite the scope, and what I hope that Kevin Feige understands is like, scope is fine and size is fine as long as it's still rooted in your characters. And I felt like that big battle sequence at the end of the movie is very much rooted in the characters, because the alien villains are completely generic. They might as well have been the bugs from Starship Troopers or whatever. Like, we know nothing about them. They have no personality. They exist only... they're a threat because of their numbers, basically, because they're pretty easy to kill. Like, there's just a lot of them. And so,
even Scarlett Johansson can kill them.
Yeah, right. And all she has is guns.
Small guns.
For me, it was about that whole sequence was more about the way that their characters responded to that situation.
Sure.
And so I really liked that. You know, that was a lot of my favorite stuff in the movie. Was that stuff at the very end, because I felt like there were some scenes earlier on, some of the action sequences lost a little bit of that character stuff. You know, people are really in love with the scene where the Hulk chases down Black Widow, and I thought it was fine, but it wasn't necessarily a high point in the movie for me.
No, I actually think that scene kind of suffers from what I talked about earlier in terms of, like, I know at some point they're going to both fight on the same side. So,
right,
like, let's
right.
just have her escape already
right.
and not get beat up by the Hulk, unless she has to learn something. I know she figures a little bit out about herself and about the Hulk. I think that was, like, the one scene where it cuts to her and she's, like, kind of scared, you know?
Right.
But it's still, like, it seems like filler to me to some extent.
Well, and...
aside from it being kind of like a horror, almost a departure from
right,
a superhero, it's like
right.
this monster chasing a girl, you
right.
know?
Right. You know, that the whole sequence is sort of engineered to... split the team up, to send Thor out of the helicarrier and to get Hulk out of, you know, to split them up, but
right.
kind of to what end, you know what I mean? Because then they basically rejoin like a scene later. It's like,
yeah,
well, why
sure.
did we need to split them up then?
Right.
I guess it was just so that for a little while, Loki thinks his plan is working, but I'm still a little unclear on Loki's plan. I mean, he wants to rule Earth. Okay. That's kind of a generic motivation. And then he wants to divide the Avengers. And the way to do that is to get the Hulk mad. And then you kind of ask yourself, like, well, how did he formulate this plan? Did he know that they were going to bring the Avengers together and that Hulk was part of it? And I
right.
guess he did. And how did he know that? Well, I guess Hawkeye told him, because Hawkeye is under his spell. Like,
but there,
I have
Hawkeye
questions
know?
Like that.
Yeah,
right. I guess because he was part of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know. So I guess, again, we're in spoilers now, so we could talk about some of our problems with the movie. I think you were about to say this, and so I
Probably.
Apologize if I beat you to it. Everything that comes like before the main title of the movie, where it says The Avengers, which
yes.
is what this movie is called, doesn't really work. Like the first
no.
10 or 15 minutes of the movie.
Absolutely not.
Are not very good.
I'll go a step further. I was bored for the first 45 minutes of the movie.
Really?
Easily.
See, once the characters start showing up, once the heroes start showing up, I'm back in. Because once we get that scene with Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow, once we get Chris Evans with the punching bag, like, All that stuff I'm on board, but...
And maybe it's because I was like, the first 15 minutes, and again, I think this has been talked about a lot online in terms of like, oh, this is not, this is weird, like how Loki shows up and they're in this, like, they're, the star power's not there. It's Nick Fury and his agent, I forgot her last name, Mills, I think her name is. Kobe Smulder, is that her name?
Maria Hill.
Hill, sorry. Yeah. And it's just, and Hawkeye is there, but I still don't really know. I mean, aside from the weird shoehorned in Hawkeye introduction in Thor, it's like, mm-hmm. Why do I care about Hawkeye? Why do I care if he takes Hawkeye? Like, I don't really care. He shows up, he takes the Tesseract, which is a hilarious name for that anyway, and this cube of energy. It's like, yes, of course, this is how comic book movies exist, and I accept that. I am willing to suspend my disbelief and just be in that world, but it is boring, and it's Loki saying, I am Loki of Asgard. And it's like, okay, like someone else who couldn't have written like, hey, that's Loki of Asgard, says one of the guards.
Well, yeah, there's a weird thing that like that they do think we're going to be invested in the idea that Hawkeye is sort of taken over by Loki and Stellan Skarsgård. And it's like, if you don't know that Jeremy Renner is playing Hawkeye, if you only remember him from that weird shoehorned in thing from Thor, like you don't understand how he factors into the story. You have no attachment to the character. So the fact that he kind of becomes a bad guy right away in the movie
almost feels like that's what's supposed to happen.
But it really makes no goddamn sense because there's no investment in it. And I don't understand how it advances the story, except the only thing I can come up with is that it gives Scarlett Johansson a motivation to participate, because it's sort of established that she's kind of out for herself a little bit, or it's hinted that she's been out for herself
to clear her file
in the past, but now that she wants to get Hawkeye back. So that's why she sort of participates.
Well, and the last thing I'll say about the opening scene, I think the reason I think that scene was such a kind of a milquetoast opening that it took me a while to kind of forget about it. That's why maybe for 45 minutes I was kind of, even when I liked the introduction of Captain America, I liked when he's punching the punching bags and stuff and he's like kind of disenchanted. The introduction of Iron Man though was a little also kind of just a little like weak, I thought. And yeah, we've got Gwyneth Paltrow doing a one-day cameo, but she looks weird and like their chemistry is a little off. Just a little bit off.
I don't know. I really liked their dialogue. I liked all the stuff about the 12%. Phil. Right. And his first name is AJ. I liked all that stuff.
But that's just, I mean, I think it's on the back of Robert Downey Jr. being a smarmy, awesome a-hole.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. But again, it goes back to capturing the voice that was there in Iron Man and Iron Man 2. And like part of what we've come to like about those characters, Pepper and Tony Stark, is like their sort of 1930s screwball comedy banter.
Sure.
And so it was great to have that back, you know, and like the movie didn't lose it. And I like that she came and did a one-day cameo because she didn't need to, you know, but it was cool to have her there.
Another quick thing about Kevin Feige. Obviously there's been, it's no secret that Eric Bana. Ooh, that's a weird callback. That's Mark Ruffalo is the Hulk, is Dr. Banner, and he's the Hulk. And the previous Incredible Hulk was Edward Norton. He said he was early in the whole production process, he had said he's willing to do it. It turned out that through contract negotiations broke down and that he was – whatever that means. Again, it's like kind of
– They didn't want him back.
But the funny thing was I read some like press release by Kevin Feige where he basically just totally screwed over. It was like really insulting just to say it didn't have anything to do with money.
No.
It was about
he was a pain in the ass.
And it's just insane to me. It's like, I'd almost rather, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm just a purist and want the, like Mark Ruffalo, I think did a great job. But
no, I'm with you. When that first happened, and that was a couple summers ago, I was bummed out because I'm like, listen, if you're going to go to all this trouble to establish a world and all this continuity, like keep the same actors, you know?
Right.
And they kind of rushed signing Mark Ruffalo because they wanted to announce it at Comic-Con 2010 at San Diego. They wanted to get all the Avengers on stage, and there was like a panel on Saturday afternoon, and they were literally signing Mark Ruffalo Friday night, putting him on a plane and flying him out there so he could be announced on stage with everybody else. And I was bummed out about it. I was like, well, keep the same people, you know? And I thought like I thought they treated Edward Norton a little unfairly, but again, I wasn't there.
Well, exactly. If it's true that he's a pain to work with, which I, you know, it's not.
They had a lot of problems on Incredible Hulk. He had a version of the movie, like he kind of did an uncredited rewrite on the movie. He had a version of the movie that he wanted out that was like longer, more character based. And they kind of went with a shorter action centric right. version. And he was a little bit public about it. So they didn't get along super
well. The whole thing just seems so petty to me just to say like, yeah, it's not based on money. It's based on characters. We want a person that gets along with this chemistry and fuck you. And it's like, wow, that's the lead of the studio basically publicly admonishing.
Yeah.
You know,
at the same time, And it's not fair because I will never see this version of the movie. After seeing it, I had a hard time imagining where Edward Norton fits in with that group because Mark Ruffalo has a very different kind of energy than everybody else, and it works. Right. And Edward Norton doesn't have that same energy. So I had a hard time picturing what the version would look like with Edward Norton. Maybe it's still great. I have no idea. But yeah, I agree. I really liked Mark Ruffalo, and he has – one of my favorite lines in the movie. I don't know if it's my favorite line.
Which one?
Right at the end, right before he changes into the Hulk last time, when he says, "That's my secret. I'm always angry." And it's Marvel is real good at cutting right to the heart of characters.
Yeah, no, that was a great line.
In so many of their movies. And I felt like in this movie, they did that several times, that they cut right to the heart of what makes this character interesting or special.
You think that, and this is maybe like the critique that a lot of people of my cut from my cloth of my ilk might have, the character, just to get down to it, the character of Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Yeah.
Why are they in the movie?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it's because they wanted to expand the team a little bit and include some more characters. I really do. And maybe some characters that didn't have to be set up in previous movies. So they're not such big characters that they need their own film, you know?
And here's the thing, though. I think that they actually did a really serviceable job. I like their chemistry with each other.
Well, that's
I think they can go on to probably do like their own kind of movie. And the truth is, like, of all the Avengers, they're the two without superpowers. That they're just like, she's just an assassin, awesome. Right. He's the best marksman ever, or something. Right. but they also, I mean, they're part of the team. I get that. But my issue, I guess, with any sort of bigger picture where you involve all these personalities and all these elements is that you have to bring them all in. And the movie runs, I think it's 2 hours and 22 minutes long. I think Joss Whedon had said that at one point there was a cut that was over 3 hours, that they cut a lot of the stuff that was Captain America's backstory or some his adjustment to modern life.
Sure.
Which I do want to see maybe in a Captain America 2 or something.
Yeah.
But then you introduce these two new characters that are just kind of like, well, if you're having such a hard time balancing all these personalities and all these storylines, you have to get to from point A to point B. You're introducing these other characters that are like, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me like, again, I like them fine, but it's the whole movie.
Hawkeye to me is the issue. And I was a fan of Hawkeye in the comic books. I like Jeremy Renner. He's fine in the movie. And once we get out of that stupid first half of the movie where he's under some spell, which again does nothing for the movie except give Scarlett Johansson some motivation, I really like him. And like you, I like the two of them together. And actually by the end, when they're together and lines like you and I remember Budapest very differently, like they're great when they're on screen together. And I was like, hey, maybe have more of that. Like this thing that's really good. Have more of that. Don't have this weird zombie for the first half of the movie.
Right.
Because Scarlett Johansson does serve a purpose within the team, within the story. She's sent out, you know, she's a S.H.I.E.L.D. operative. That's been established in Iron Man 2. She's the one who's sent out to recruit.
She seems
Bruce
like
Banner.
Utility. She's a utilitarian.
Right. Like, and that's fine. And so to have her jump on
the
team,
mission.
To have her jump on the team makes sense. It's Hawkeye that is sort of out of nowhere and then shoehorned into the group. And again, maybe that would be better serviced by an Avengers 2. I don't know. I really liked Scarlett Johansson's first scene where the interrogation.
I did too, actually. I liked it a lot.
And then I liked the callback where she's talking to Loki and that's been set up. You know, I thought that was all really well done.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny. Just credit to Scarlett Johansson for that first scene where she's being interrogated. Like, I'm thinking like she's fucked. She's screwed. And she's not at all. That's like why it's, you know, it just plays really well.
The movie, I think, has a lot of really funny lines, a lot of good jokes, not just from Robert Downey Jr., even though he has the best ones, But I thought there were a lot of moments that had me laughing, sometimes just out of happiness. And a lot of that is from the Hulk, kind of late in the movie. He would do something that would just have me so excited that I would laugh out of surprise, particularly the scene where he beats the shit out of Loki.
Excuse me.
But also when he punches Thor, which I think was true to the character of the Hulk, wasn't just a laugh at the expense of the character. Because I felt like there were a few times, and again, this is super nitpicking. I really like the movie. I really want to see it again, especially talking about it now. Like, it makes me excited to go see it again.
Right.
Thor has a line that gets a big laugh where he talks about he's still my brother, and then they say he killed all these people and he wants to rule the world. And there's a beat. He says he's adopted. And ha ha ha, it's a funny line, and Chris Hemsworth timing is fine. But it seems like there's a few moments in the movie where characters, like, are being funny on purpose, where it doesn't make sense that, like, this character doesn't know he's funny. Like, Thor doesn't, like, make jokes, really.
Right.
So there was just a few moments where it felt more like Joss Whedon making a joke than the character. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But then there were other moments that were genuinely funny that, to me, didn't seem to sacrifice character. And then there's one more nitpick that I want to get out. There's, I mean, a ton of nitpicks, but I was really bummed out at the end. I felt like it was a little anticlimactic. Like, Robert Downey Jr. flies up, and that's great. That completes his arc that he's going to sacrifice himself, and he is laying it on the line, like Captain America talked about earlier. And he blows up the thing, and it shuts everybody down. Like, really? That's it? He blows it up, and all the other things die off, and
well,
that's
I think
it,
what he also did was he implanted a virus from his MacBook into the alien software.
But I'm even okay with that. What bummed me out more was, again, when we get back to, for some reason, Hawkeye and Stellan Skarsgård have to be under
a spell. You also have to love the fact when he falls from the, like, Hulk saves him. That's pretty awesome.
I do love that. However, some of that was ruined by the trailers. But also, it comes at the, like, had that happened in battle, I felt like that would have been more exciting. Because it's like this one more neat character beat, but where we're already, already coming down, you know, whatever. It's fine. I like that he saves him, but I wanted that to be in a fight. But I was really bummed out at the whole, like, Stellan Skarsgård, like, oh, I built a failsafe into the scepter. Even though I was hypnotized, I must have been enough. There must have been enough of me in there to build in a failsafe, and we can shut it down. And it's like, that's just a crazy easy shortcut. And who cares, right? Like I said,
no. But
super
I think,
nitpicky. But I
gonna,
just felt like, that's cheap.
If you're going to buy into that, if you're going to buy into that, okay, this is a spoiler, and maybe you can explain this in the first sequence. The first sequence,
yeah.
Hawkeye is turned into a zombie.
Yeah.
Zombie. Hawkeye is the zombie. He takes his gun and he is, you correct me if I'm wrong, he's the world's best marksman.
With a bow and arrow.
He shoots Nick Fury.
Yes.
Right?
But maybe he's not the best marksman with a gun. I don't
know. But he shoots him nonetheless.
I believe you are correct. Yeah.
How does Nick Fury survive? Is he wearing a bulletproof vest?
Right.
Why didn't Hawkeye shoot him in the face? But here's the thing that actually my wife pointed out to me is, like, if you're going to buy the fact that there's a failsafe and that Stellan Skarsgård has a little bit of him in him, then Hawkeye would also then, like, maybe not shoot to kill, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
He would shoot to thrill, I think.
Again, these
but here's, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to, like, the whole fantasy thing, whatever, like, okay, Loki is a god, blah, blah, blah. So the Hulk gets inside, they're in Stark's residence, and the Hulk grabs him in one of your favorite, it's a great sequence where, like, he's like, kneel before me, I'm a god, and, like, before you know it, Hulk has him by the leg and is beating him.
Right.
It's hilarious and awesome. It's just what you want him to experience. But, like, he's fine. It's no problem. It's like, what? So we need to, like, put him in magical handcuffs and and take him with the Tesseract into space. I don't understand. Like, that's why my disconnect. It's like, okay, I'm willing to accept all these things. But at a certain point, it's like when you do have a fantasy-based story, it's so easy to write in – if you're the writer or director or whatever, it's so easy to write to all these escape routes, all these outs, you know, where you can be like, well, you know, he was this way all along or, you know, it's like –
Yeah. Some of that is just it goes with the package. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be willing to take certain leaps when you're watching this big superhero movie. to me, where it cheats is moments like that, where it's like they just invent an out for themselves that's not based in character. You know, like, why is Loki alive? Well, okay, but it's been established, you know, Thor survived that fall. Like, okay, these guys are, you know, difficult to kill. But to me, that cheat where he was like, oh, I built a failsafe. Like, ah, come on, guys. Right, like, maybe figure out another way around it. I don't know what it would have been, but whatever. But these these are, you know, stupid nitpicks.
I don't think they're they're absolutely nitpicks. Yeah. I think that if people are listening to this podcast, it's like, that's what we're talking about. And here's the thing. We said for a half an hour, it's a great movie. Everyone should go see it.
Yeah.
But there's things. And again, I'm just trying to reconcile my past and my experiences and what I kind of gravitate towards naturally with this fantastical thing. And I'm still saying I like the movie, but I'm still saying, well, I wish that it was a little less like this, a little more like that, blah, blah, blah. Just, you know,
right.
But that's.
Did you like the scene where they fought each other?
Which one?
Where like Thor and Iron Man have their big smackdown.
Yeah. Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah. I like that more than actually the Hulk and Black Widow scene.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it too, but it felt like a little bit shoehorned in as a way of like, we got to have these characters fight each other, you know?
I just liked it though. I think it worked for me in a way because I liked it when Captain America got between them and was that kind of beacon of awesomeness.
Right. Because again, he has one of my favorite lines in the movie too. And we should talk about some of our favorite things in the movie. And it's so true to the character, and I so admire them for including it, because in some ways it's kind of off-putting, especially from like Joss Whedon, who's like a pretty progressive liberal guy, but he has Captain America say like, there's only one God, ma'am, and he doesn't look like that. I mean, it's so like,
right.
It could be off-putting, you know, but like it's so true to his character.
It was weird also when he tipped Nick Fury when he got into the ship. It's like, oh, that's interesting. He tipped the black guy.
But he has so many moments, and I love how he kind of takes charge at the end, and he's sort of like using military strategy. Like, yeah, this is what he would be doing, and he sort of knows how to command.
That's his superpower, right?
And I thought that was great that they acknowledge that, because you definitely expect the movie to become the Tony Stark show, and I didn't feel like it did. You know, I think it avoided that pitfall. What the hell was I going to say before that, though? Captain America, when they fight. Oh, this is so stupid, right? But I thought for sure we get that great moment where Thor shoots the lightning at Tony Stark and Jarvis comes on and says, you know, power level's 400%. He says, oh, what do you know? Why that doesn't pay off at the end bums me out, because Tony Stark is unconscious and possibly dead. How do we revive him? I thought for sure, like, oh, Thor, hit him with the lightning, right? Because we've already established that powers him up. But instead we have Hulk scare him awake. And it's one of those moments where it's like, it's a laugh at the expense of the reality of the movie.
I agree, but I do think that the Hulk shouting, because it's a very quiet scene and he shouts, it is like a genuine, I mean, it's I was willing to accept it just because it was a genuine laugh where I'm just like, oh, that, and it woke him up and he wanted shawarma. So
you stayed all the way through the credits, right?
Yeah. I saw the shawarma scene.
I mean, I thought it was really funny, and it definitely felt like maybe the most Joss Whedon moment in the whole thing, because for as much as he has a very specific voice, I was really relieved that it didn't become a movie in which everybody is Joss Whedon trading little pop culture references and stuff like that, you know? So I thought that scene at the end, which I thought was really funny. And you know that scene they just shot like a couple weeks ago.
No, I had no idea.
They were on stage, I want to say, possibly for the premiere of the movie. I mean, it literally was like mid-April.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it somehow, somebody got up on stage and said, like, actually, we're getting together tonight to shoot one more thing. And I'm almost positive that it was that scene.
That's great. Yeah,
which, you know, sends you out of the theater just like laughing and convinced that like that movie was awesome because that scene worked and no one speaks and it has the courage to just have them sit there totally silent. I mean, the look on Chris Hemsworth on Chris Hemsworth's face sells that whole scene for me.
But it's also a thing too. I mean, you're right. I think that a scene like that totally makes you forget some of the weaknesses, if there are any, with this movie. But it's also, and it's funny. No one speaks. It's Joss Whedon-esque. But it also is like, you look at all their faces and it's like, what would these, if these guys actually went to get shawarma, like what the, they would have nothing to talk about. Right. They would just sit there. Like they're all so dissimilar and that's what makes them so great together.
Right. Right. What did you now as a non comic book reader, could you make any sense out of the mid credit reveal?
No, I mean, I read up on it. No, I had no idea. I just assumed it was like a bigger villain, you know, like another villain for the next movie.
It's fine that they included it, but, you know, and as a comic book guy, I'm like, hey, neat, Thanos. But like,
Thanos,
it's not the kind of reveal, you know, they rarely have gotten the reveal right, with the exception of like, we'd like to speak to you about the Avengers Initiative. That was the one that's like, holy shit, that's a huge surprise to everyone.
Right.
Because everywhere else, it's like at the end of Iron Man 2, they find Thor's hammer and they're like, we found it. But guess what? We knew that next summer the Thor movie was coming out. Like, that works if we had no idea they were making a Thor movie. And then they find the hammer and we're like, holy shit, that means they're going to make a Thor movie.
Real quick about the Thor hammer, they found it. But here's the thing. They don't know what the Thor hammer is at this point, right?
Yeah,
But yeah, no, for real, because I was remember like watching the end of Iron Man 2 and the Thor hammer thing. And it's like, I actually watched it just the end of Iron Man 2 again right before I watched Thor. And then when Thor shows up, they don't know it's Thor and they don't know what Thor is and no one knows anything about Norse mythology. So like, what exactly is this hammer? Unless it's just purely based on like their scientific readings of the the space-time continuum, Earth, you know, the storms and all that stuff. But like, we found the hammer. We found it. I don't think they explicitly say hammer, exclusively say hammer.
I really liked about halfway through the movie that a mystery is sort of established that S.H.I.E.L.D. is onto something bigger and we don't know what, and the Avengers start to sort of bond over their collective mistrust of, are we being used? What's going on? You know, you guys have a bigger plan in mind and we don't know what it is. And I was a little bummed out because I felt like the plot itself wasn't super compelling. So I was excited that there was this little kind of mystery hook. I was a little bummed out that it got revealed pretty quickly, and I felt like the reveal was a little bit like, okay. But, I mean, I think it's true.
What was
like,
the reveal again? Just
it was like, we're building nuclear weapons. Like, we want to use the Tesseract to build super-powered weapons because we don't know what else is out there. And I take back saying that, like, that was disappointing because I think that is kind of true to the reality of the movie and the reality of the characters that, like, hey, we learned that we're not alone and we need a contingency plan, you know? I was a little bummed out that the reveal happened so quickly, but honestly, had they drawn it out, it probably would have gotten old. You know, how long can you really drag that out?
What did you think about, and it's talked about a little bit, and there's really no payoff is the wrong word, but obviously when, let's talk really quickly about Coulson dying.
Yeah.
Clark Gregg's
boo.
Death.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely boo because he is one of my favorites in everything he's in.
Yeah.
I remember watching him in the West Wing. He was a Secret Service agent in the West Wing. And he was great. He was pretty much the same character in everything he does. Like that kind of very monotone, like robotic, emotionless type person. He's almost like a Vulcan, if you will. And he's great. And he's a very specific kind of character that this movie kind of needs in terms of its belief in the S.H.I.E.L.D. initiative and all that stuff. And Loki makes short work of him. He stabs him right through the heart, I assume, or through the chest with his saber, with his staff, with his whatever.
Yeah.
And he dies, and it's really sucky because he's a great character. But then he shoots real quick. This is a quick little nitpicky thing. I know we're not talking about nitpicky things anymore. So he has one of those awesome weapons that they got the idea from that fire-breathing monster in Thor. And he gets a chance to use it on Loki. So he shoots him. And the last beat before he dies is like, oh, that's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but then the very next scene is Loki, or not the very next scene. I think two scenes later is Loki walking away. Like, what? I don't understand. Like, if you're going to like have him be like mutilated or something, have him be
I had a bigger issue with, oh, that's what it does, because I felt like it just repeated a really funny line from like three lines before where he says, I don't even know what it does. Like the way he says it and the way it's kind of thrown away had me laughing really hard. And so I felt like, oh, that's what it does was unnecessary or whatever. Yeah. But
just like, I just want them to have like, there's no stakes. Again, it's this fantastical thing that I don't like. It's when Loki is like, oh, he gets knocked down, but he gets back up again. should have called him Chumbawamba.
I wasn't surprised to see Agent Coulson die because, you know, Joss Whedon has almost a compulsive need to murder characters in his properties. If you watch his shows, you're just like, I cannot believe they're killing off the people that they're killing off. And also, you know, of everybody, he was probably the most expendable. And sure. I like that it led to him almost saying the word avenge, but then dying first.
Well, okay. Now that sequence in particular, like, he believes so strongly in S.H.I.E.L.D. and he talks to Sam Jackson and blah, blah, yeah. blah. And he's like, gives them motivation. And then Sam Jackson uses that. And then even Agent Hill points out
yeah.
that like he is duplicitous. And
yeah, kind of, but, you know, but I like that too, because I feel like it gives some dimension to Nick Fury, which is a guy who's willing to manipulate a situation to get the results that he wants. It's more interesting than just a guy who's like, get together, superheroes. You know what right. I mean?
Do we know how Nick Fury lost his eye?
No. I believe a grilling accident. No, I'm sure there's a version in the comics. I don't know. I've only ever known him with an eye patch. And again, in the comics that I was reading back in the 80s, he's like a white guy with gray temples and a cigar. Like, it wasn't until,
like,
I think...
Oh my God, Avengers.
Exactly. Brian Michael Bendis did a book called The Ultimates, which was like they try and reinvent the Avengers, basically, and drew Nick Fury to look exactly like Sam Jackson. And so then when they make Iron Man, it's like the dog is eating its own tail. It's like, well, let's have him look like the Ultimates version, which just looked like Sam Jackson. So whatever.
I think he actually paid Sam Jackson for the likeness. I think he agreed to like, yeah, you can use my likeness if you pay me. And then yeah, right. and he's like, I'm going to get double salary because I'm going to be this guy in the movie. That's
now
he's
in the movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was bummed out to see Agent Coulson die because, again, he's this connective tissue between all the movies. But, I mean, thematically,
he's
it kind of
too.
Makes sense. Yeah, 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 definitely. But thematically, it does kind of make sense, and it gives motivation to some of the, you know, it gives motivation to Iron Man. Yeah. And I like, again, that it sort of underscores what's great about Captain America, that Agent Coulson, Captain America is what he believed in, you know, that he was a symbol, and so Captain America has to, like, live up to being that symbol.
Right.
There's a few moments throughout the movie where I felt like some of the action, and particularly some of the extra work, the extras, it mm-hmm. reminded me a lot of like the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man. Like, I didn't love all the photography because I always felt like the original Spider-Man sometimes was a little bit ugly, not okay. on purpose. And I felt like some of that happened in the Avengers, and some of the stuff with the extras in Spider-Man and again in the Avengers, I felt like was a little corny. The scene with the cops. I mean, I get it that like, oh, they have to become believers in Captain America. And it's a neat moment because, again, here's our cynical world confronted with this guy wearing the flag. And we are immediately convinced by his awesomeness. And we're just like, yeah, okay, we'll do what he says. But, right, like, right. the bit with, like, the little Growing Pains daughter at the end on the news and, like, some
Wait,
of the
what?
Stuff.
The Growing Pains daughter?
The girl who's like, Captain America saved my life. I want to say thank you. Right. She was the youngest daughter on Growing Pains.
No way!
Yeah, yeah. She's all grown up. So some of that stuff, I just, again, corny isn't a fair word to use because that's part of the movie's charm, that it's willing to be kind of corny, you know, but I just, these are such nitpicks. These are such nitpicks.
We that's established. It's okay.
I had a great time in the movie. Did you have favorite moments?
I'll say this. I wish there was, what I respond to in movies oftentimes is kind of what anyone would respond to. In a lot of like, and especially in a universe like Marvel, and again, I don't know it as nearly as well as you do or our fans do, but obviously in this universe, there's so many layers to it. And I feel like, yeah, in the first Iron Man, there's the Avengers, when they tease the Avengers, I wasn't even like responding to that but I did respond to it because I'm like, wait, if everyone, this is something big, but I don't really know what it is yet. And then I, another reason I don't like Kevin Feige, and I think he had come out and said that, I read this on Badass Digest where he said that there's no Easter eggs. There's absolutely nothing in the movie. Don't look. And I'm like, why the fuck? That's a great thing to have. Like,
If I
see Captain America's shield in the background in a Thor movie, how awesome. It's like, oh my God, did you see that? That's great.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you have that? And I think that I needed the movie to have more of that, but it wouldn't, obviously, just because of Joss Whedon, I think, agreed with Kevin Feige and said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just, it is what it is. And I'm like, I don't know. I think that's kind of – now, going back to the – and I don't really know. I'm still thinking about my favorite moments in the movie. Mm-hmm. And this, again, I just saw it like literally a few hours ago. So mm-hmm. I'm sure my opinions will evolve, obviously, too. I asked you about the inclusion of Hawkeye and Black Widow in the movie. And I realized – I think I read that they're – are other Avengers that did not appear in the movie. Do you know? I mean,
I mean, again, you're talking about a continuity that is constantly changing.
But
I mean,
specifically, there was Ant-Man, Giant Man, and Wasp, right?
Yes, they were some of the original Avengers. But I mean, Vision and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver were Avengers. At a certain point, literally almost any hero in the Marvel Universe has been in the Avengers. You know what I mean? Like,
was Spider-Man ever? This is my nerdy.
I mean, as recently as a couple of years ago, Brian Michael Bendis sort of reinvented the Avengers. And yeah, Spider-Man was one of it was called the New Avengers, and Spider-Man was one of them, and so was Wolverine.
I so want to see that too, you know. Like, and again, sure. I'm not a fanboy for this stuff, but like, I do love those properties, and I do love those franchises. And like, if you're gonna cross worlds, why not cross it with like your biggest marquee player?
And that's kind of the bummer of the fact that like all these different studios own these different properties because they're not necessarily going to cross over, you know, because Sony is going to be super protective of Spider-Man. And that's why we keep getting these stupid reboots, because if they don't make a movie, if they don't exercise that option on that property every couple of years, they lose it. So every couple of years, we're going to get like another terrible Ghost Rider movie so that Sony can hold on to Ghost Rider, you know, like,
I think one of my favorite moments from the movie, and I think this is why, obviously I'm partial and I've said this a couple times, like I love Iron Man and I love Captain America. Those are my two favorites. I do love Thor a lot, but it's mostly Chris Hemsworth's portrayal of Thor, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Any scene between Tony Stark and Captain America, I forgot his real name. What's his real name?
Chris Evans, Steve Rogers.
Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Any scene between them, because it is like this down to the most basic level of like a cynical modern, sarcastic out for himself, selfish, versus the complete opposite of that. And I just love, I wish there was more of that. You know?
And again, you have to appreciate in 2012, like a movie that embraces Captain America's goodness, his optimism, because he's the one who brings Tony Stark around to his way of thinking, not the other way around. You know, it'd be so easy for like, let's drag Captain America down into our cynicism and misery. But like, no, he brings everybody else up to his level. And that's great in a movie in 2012, where it's almost always about cynicism and shittiness.
Oh, like, absolutely.
For him to bring Tony Stark around to be more like him is to be admired. But yeah, I agree. I remember from the like the first trailer I ever saw, the one thing that had me excited, this was before they had that shot of Hulk rescuing Iron Man. The one thing that had me excited was like a line that Chris Evans delivered to Tony Stark, like, "Ah, big man in a suit, what are you?" And I was like, yes, I'm interested in that dynamic. The dynamic between the two of them had me excited. And yeah, all of the scenes where they are interacting with one another, I thought, were where the movie really worked. Even that scene where they all start arguing.
Yeah, it was a little like on the nose, but I mean, it was like obviously kind of designed to be that scene, but it was like, they all had valid things and they were saying things that kind of picking the scab at old sores, you know?
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I want to go see the movie again, and I'll probably watch it a bunch when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray. Not because I love every single minute of it, because there are scenes that I don't think totally work, especially those first 10 minutes. But like, there's these peaks throughout the movie that I'm already, like I said, chasing, where I want to get back to that moment where Chris Evans says, you know, Hulk, smash, and he jumps up and just starts tearing shit up, because the movies really haven't gotten Hulk right yet, you know?
Well, to your point that you were talking about early before about the extras, about some of them are being like corny and stuff. I want to just say this is such a out of left field thing. There was one extra, not an extra, I guess extras don't talk, but one actor, very small part, on the bridge of the helicarrier, which also the helicarrier, it's like, yeah, sure, helicarrier, whatever. And he was like, you know, saying like, you know, should the engine one is out, sir. And I'm like, where have I seen that guy before? And I realized he was the rookie cop on the Chicago Code. So I'm like, yes, that makes me really
nice
sad that I
see.
Saw all 10 hours of the Chicago Code. But
yeah, but it paid off when you watched the Avengers finally.
You think the guy is in the Avengers movie, so I'm sure his career is fine. But it's like, you think that was like, Mom, I landed this great TV show on Fox. Yeah. And now I'm like the guy saying Engine 1 is Iron Man and Engine 3.
I'm excited that the movie is doing so well, because I think it's really good. And again, you know, if
wait, are you though? Like, do you think that that's going to beget like it's going to?
Well, that's kind of where I was going. Yeah.
Let me just interrupt you.
Yeah, please.
God, that was
because as much as I say, like, no, people, you know, stop with, like, this is what we should have from in a summer blockbuster. But, like, yeah, this is a summer blockbuster that pays attention to character and dialogue. It has really good dialogue. And that rarely, like, look at those fucking Transformers movies. I mean, that is some of the worst dialogue ever. This movie has really good dialogue. Right, exactly.
It has Zach Penn, Kevin Feige scope. This movie has... that, like, could never fly in Manhattan. Like, where's their propulsion system?
This movie has a line like Captain America saying, there's only one God, man. And he doesn't look like that.
Right.
So there's so many great lines in the movie. And it has great characterization and good performances, you know. So there's... It has so many things that we should want out of movies, and I'm excited because it's this huge gamble that paid off, that they kind of stuck the landing and that they're going to be rewarded for that. I am excited, but yeah, I'm a little nervous about it. A, because I think it creates a new bar, not quality-wise, just success-wise.
Scope-wise.
scope-wise, yeah, for every other movie that, like, oh, now we have to be as big as the Avengers. And I don't think that's going to be good for the movie industry. But also because of, like, what I think you were about to say, that I worry that Marvel will learn the wrong lessons. And they've been very smart so far in choosing their actors, in exercising some amount of quality control, and specifically in choosing their directors. You know, think about the people who have made some of these movies. You have Sam Raimi and Kenneth Branagh and Jon Favreau and Joss Whedon, Bryan Singer, you know, like, some really interesting filmmakers have been responsible for some of these movies.
With visions and direct, like an idea. Or not just like utilitarian whatever, that they come in with like a perspective and not a Michael Bay perspective.
And when you hear that, like, Kenneth Branagh is doing Thor, you're like, yeah, I can kind of imagine what that's going to look like. Or even Joe Johnston doing Captain America, maybe just because he did The Rocketeer. But you're like, I kind of imagine. I know what that's going to look like.
Why Natalie Portman even signed on to say, like, Kenneth Branagh directing a superhero movie? Yeah, like, right. I got to be part
of this. That's interesting.
And then I have to totally drag this down.
But I worry that they're going to learn the wrong lessons and that they're going to now greenlight a whole bunch of, like, lesser comic book movies because they're going to think, like, oh, well, this is what America wants, right? Just nonstop superhero movies. And honestly, I mean, after this summer, I think the burnout is going to be complete. Like, the Avengers gave us everything we want out of this larger-than-life, colorful, fun superhero movie. Dark Knight Rises, I think, is going to give us everything we want out of this dark, gritty, sort of crime movie. And Spider-Man is going to give us another Spider-Man movie, so we're going to be spent.
You're right in that this is it. This is the pinnacle. This is it, because I think there will always be superhero movies. It's an established formula.
Yeah.
But I think that this is, like, if you are a fan of this kind of movie, and I am, even though I'm not, like, a reader of the comic books, or I don't have that history when I was a kid, it definitely is something special. This whole summer is ridiculous. Just to think that we have. In any other summer, a Battleship would be a huge movie.
Right.
Men in Black 3 would be enormous. You've not heard anything about these movies. You've heard about Dark Knight, Avengers, even Hunger Games. I know it's not a summer movie, but still, like, that kind of opening the doors to summer and saying, like, yeah, 400 million bitches, you know?
Right. And now here's Avengers already, you know, probably poised to beat that.
And they're all quality.
And it's the first movie of the summer, you know what I mean? Right. Like, right out of the gate, it's just going to destroy everything. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with Dark Knight Rises.
My fear, too, is that you said, you know, before about Marvel being, like, learning the wrong lessons. I'm just afraid that, like, this further kind of not only raises the bar in quality, but just, like, kind of makes a lot of movies, like, the movie-making business is kind of swinging back towards that, you know, you can't really do it if you're a startup. Like, if you're a kid out of college and wants to make a movie, it's becoming harder and harder. Even though the technology is becoming easier and more affordable, and everyone's got Final Cut Pro, and everyone's got a point-and-shoot camera that has video capability – it's like, well, you're not at the level of this, and it will always kind of sustain the studios. But it's like, well, I guess when you want the kind of smaller action movie, you can't really do that because everything needs to have a billion explosions.
Right. But will people look at this and just see the box office and say, oh, America wants superheroes? Or will they actually, like, take a step back and understand that this is such an anomaly, because not only do you have five movies that all cost hundreds of millions of dollars each – building up to this, that it's essentially a sequel to a $700 million movie. You know what I mean? Because if you add up the budgets of all the other ones. But you also have decades and decades of comic books, like, that people have been reading. So these characters have been around forever. This isn't just this thing that you can reproduce easily, you know, like this is an anomaly. And so to try and think that like, oh, they want superheroes and let's just cram as many characters in, you know, I don't know. How quickly does DC greenlight a Justice League movie? I don't know. You know, they tried to do it a couple of years ago, like motion capture, and it all fell through. But the last thing I'll say about the movie, and this is, we've been talking bigger picture, and now I'm going to go back to one specific thing. I don't think the Thanos reveal is particularly exciting again, except unless you're a huge comic book nerd and you're like, oh, hey, I think Thanos is going to be the villain in Avengers 2. But like, again, big deal. The reveal that excited me a lot more and that I think they could have left the movie on without any of the Thanos stuff was that last shot of Tony and Pepper Potts, and it pulls back the Stark building and the only letter left is the A.
Oh yeah, great. It was a great visual.
Yeah, like, because now, you know, again, as a comic book reader in your head, you're like, oh, they're going to do the Avengers mansion next, you know, and that was exciting.
Oh, is that something?
Tony Stark, in the comics, Tony Stark.
Is that a retcon?
Builds and owns the Avengers mansion, you know? And so that's what that last shot suggests, that they're rebuilding the Stark Tower to be the Avengers mansion. And so that was exciting to me. And again, it came out of the story that we had just been told. It didn't just all of a sudden introduce like, oh, and by the way, there's this guy and you'll see him in 4 years, everyone.
Right. If anything, I'll talk just briefly about the Thanos thing is that what I'm not crazy about is like just people sitting on rocks in space and like the humans are dead. So like the reveal is like, oh great. I thought like dispensing with the Loki character, it means we don't have to necessarily have like these gods and these, I mean, again, my nitpicky goes to the core of my being, but it's also like the guy, the other, I believe his name was like the guy controlling the strings of of Loki looked to me like Skeletor. The acting was ridiculous.
Kind of like hey, man.
Right. And kind of like Hawkeye's acting, by the way, in the first half of the movie was kind of very ridiculous and very kind of like everything was like snapping the bow out. Yeah. And I'm like, what are you doing? Stop it.
He's like, the only one who's like acting like he's in an action movie. Just like, absolutely. I got to do this because I totally thought the same thing. But again, it goes back to this thing that like if you like more grounded, regular villains or threats or whatever, like you're probably going to get that out of an Iron Man movie. It's just going to be another guy who also builds suits or whatever, you know, it's going to be Obadiah Stane or Whiplash. When you get to the Avengers, you can't just have some like billionaire guy who builds robots. Like you have to go big, you have to go outer space, you have to go gods, you know.
And maybe for me, that's just the built-in flaw, you know. I'll never be totally on board with that than I will be with even Captain America. I know that the villain, the Red Skull, I forgot his powers actually. I only saw the movie once.
Head was red.
Oh yeah, and it was a skull, right?
That was
no nose. But it still was, you know, to me, just it's, you know, I realize that. I get that the Avengers will, and same with, I assume, a Justice League, and I don't know anything about DC.
Right, but that's what's neat about the Marvel movie universe, just like that's what's neat about the Marvel comic book universe, is that you can read these individual books or see these individual movies, and they exist in this one world, and then when you combine them all, they're part of this much bigger, crazier world, you know? And as long as they stay true to the characters and focus on that dynamic, I don't think it totally matters what the threat is. Obviously, you want the threat to be big. You want the stakes to be high. But what will make the movie work isn't the fact that it is or is not Thanos or any alien or any god. What will make the movie work is the group dynamic.
Absolutely. And the group dynamic is awesome. Yeah. And honestly, I could watch an hour and a half movie of them just kind of like hanging out, you know, and fighting smaller villains. But I realize again,
like purse snatchers.
Yeah. Right. Those guys are out of control.
Drug dealers. This is like, just like pot dealers. Let's have a whole movie where the Avengers take on just like college student pot dealers.
Just go to Oaksterdam University. And like, we're shutting this thing down.
Tear apart a college and beat the shit out of these little guys holding dime bags and
like
stuff.
Pepper spraying the UC Davis students. What? This cops did this. Thugs. You should explicitly see the Avengers if you haven't already. Thank you very much for having me on the show, Ben.
Thank you for talking about the Avengers for like a really long time. Everyone, that's go cool. See it. Yay, summer 2012 is underway.
Absolutely.
Douglas, last thoughts?
Douglas smash.